Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are, well, we're virtual today, folks, but guess what? We're going to be back in our studio here in a few days as we do this show here in mid-April, and we're excited about that. In the meantime, and as you may remember and you know, well, you know if you've been listening to the show, our studio's inside Renaissance Bank on Windward Parkway in Alpharetta, and Renaissance Bank has been active and at it all this time, pandemic or no pandemic, helping small business owners. And here's what I would tell you about the way they work. If you like a automated way of doing business, if you like 1-800 numbers and automated voices and all that kind of stuff, don't go to Renaissance. That's not going to work for you. But if you want more personal service in your bank, but you want a bank that's big enough to be able to handle pretty much any need you can throw at them, my suggestion is go to renaissancebank.com, find the local office near you. They've got some 200 across the southeast ready to serve you, and go give them a call and make an appointment and go see them. And I think you'll be glad you did. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Richard Morgan. Richard is with Morgan and DeSalvo. Richard, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So let's talk about you and your firm. How are you serving folks out there?
So I'm Richard Morgan at Morgan and DeSalvo. We are a specialty estate planning firm. Basically two tax lawyers, with three lawyers, two of us tax lawyers, a couple of paralegals, and we specialize in all aspects of estate planning. Had this firm since 1995, started in 1987 after being a double dog in Georgia, accounting and law, and then got my LLM, Bachelor's of Tax Law at Emory in high school for about 4.5 years. But this is basically what we've been doing for quite a while.
You know, I want to get into estate planning for, and we're going to dive deep into this in just a second, but I think it's interesting, and it says something about your profession that you really have to specialize in this. I mean, and do it all the time because it's such a complex area of the law, right?
Yeah. So just a little bit of background. I was a general tax lawyer and then ended up falling into the subspecialty. I would say that estate planning done right, where you can do anything for someone as opposed to aspects of something, it's really a subspecialty of tax law. So tax lawyers specialize in this area and they can do all the aspects because tax law kind of weaves its way through pretty much all aspects of estate planning.
Okay. Now, I'm sure everyone thinks they know what estate planning is, but why don't you talk about how you see it? What is estate planning and why is it important?
So right now, everyone has the full ability to do whatever they want in this life. You don't hurt anyone. You don't break the laws. You can do whatever you want. You are free. But what if you can't, either incapacity or death? You physically cannot do what you want to do. So estate planning allows you to control what happens and who's in control to make sure what you want to happen actually takes place. There is a court-based system for all of this. Instead of having a probate of a will, you have an administration process without a will. But instead of having a power of attorney document, you have a conservatorship of your property. Instead of having a healthcare directive, you have a guardianship with a person. But going through the court-based process is normally way more complex and expensive and hassle-filled and time-consuming. Estate planning basically privatizes that entire system. Makes it easier.
So there's several different kind of basic needs that everyone has in terms of the estate planning journey, if we can put it that way. Talk about what those are.
Yeah, so everyone needs what I would call a base estate plan. The base estate plan includes two agency documents. That is, someone can assist you while you're alive if you need assistance. One's for financial matters, that's a power of attorney, and one's for body decisions, healthcare, doctors, HIPAA representative, In Georgia, that's called the Advanced Directive for Healthcare. In different states, it has different names. Sometimes it's two different documents. Then you have a will, and the will says, what happens to my stuff when I die? Who's in control? If you have minor kids, who's the guardian? Things like that. And then you may or may not have another document referred to as a revocable living trust. It's a different structure. That could be doing the same thing, though. It has some additional benefits.
Mm. And revocable living trust, that's a term that a lot of people hear. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So as a kind of a specialist tax lawyer specialized in this area, we take everyone as they come. You will often hear people say, everyone needs a revocable living trust, and you have to put all your assets into this trust for it to work. It's mostly nonsense. Everyone is different. Some people, probate in Georgia is fine. It's simple. It's not a big deal in most cases. Revocable trusts are often used to avoid probate. In Georgia, we normally don't care about probate unless there's special circumstances. But there are other benefits of this a little bit more sophisticated kind of base plan structure called the revocable living trust. And just as a little background, the way the revocable trust works is the client, you, are in control as the trustee while you're alive. So you're not giving up control. You're the beneficiary. You're not giving up the benefits. It's just technically a little bit different. Instead of owning assets in your own name, you own assets in this trust structure. And then when you pass away, it deals with what assets are in it, and then you'd have other assets paid to it, kind of like a will, just same process, similar process, outside of probate process. It does provide a series of kind of side benefits that some people really like and some people don't care.
Gotcha. Now, Richard, the estate planning process is particularly important to business owners. I think some of those reasons are obvious, but why don't you dive into that?
Okay. I know a lot of your listeners are business owners. So as I said, we take everyone as they come to us with their unique situation. A business owner has unique needs. And these kinds of unique needs include, well, if it's a family-owned company, a closely held company, it's going to be business succession or exit planning. How is the thing going to transition? If you retire, can't work anymore, you deceased, incapacitated, what happens? There's liquidity issues. What happens if something happened, if you pass away and you have all these debts and they had to be paid? There may be a big tax liability. How's it going to be paid? You need cash. If you don't have cash, your family may be forced to force sell assets in a quick period of time at a fire sale type price, which is a disaster. You also have issues of asset protection because people that are in business have higher risk of being liable to someone for some damage that they have suffered or debt that they're owed. There's also issues of being fair to the family. So let's say that some of the kids work in the family, one or more work in the family and one or more do not. And this company may be the mass majority of your wealth. How do you do this for the family? Some work, some don't. How's this going to work? Those are just a number of special situations you have to deal with for a business owner.
What are the biggest, other than failing to plan, and maybe that is the answer, but what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see business owners make when it comes to estate planning?
So it all comes down to failure to plan, but different aspects to it. So even before you come to an estate planner, have you dealt with your business properly? Is it T's crossed, I's dotted? A lot of times companies are started on a shoestring and then they grow and they haven't really gone back and fixed everything. So you want to make sure that the business structure is properly there and you have all the documentation, the annual minutes or whatever it is you need to do to keep this solid. So you get what you think you get, which is limited liability and other aspects of this entity. You want to make sure it's proper so you don't get whacked upside the head with a big problem. The other is you don't think about succession planning. What if? So if there's more than one owner, what happens? Are you going to end up in partnership with someone's spouse and the like? If there is a shareholders agreement, are there funds to pay the value? Is the value done in a way that it actually reflects the value y'all think the company is worth versus some kind of set number? There's a myriad of issues related to just not thinking through what happens if. That's what lawyers do. What happens if? Because we see lots of problems and we try to avoid the problems. It's way easier to avoid them than it is to deal with them after the fact.
And sometimes it, for some business owners, I would think, I mean, they hear estate planning and they think that's a costly kind of process, right? And they don't weigh the negative impact financial that's huge and a big multiple of what it costs to engage you to get it done correctly.
Correct. Great point. So estate planning is kind of a term of art, a loaded word that people think means it's for the ultra wealthy, but that's not what lawyers think it means when we use that term. What we mean is it's the ability to control the otherwise uncontrollable. That's all it is. Whether you have a dollar and a half, or you have $1 billion, it's the same process. It just gets more complicated when there's major tax issues involved. If there are major tax issues involved, it's the same thing whether it's a dollar and a half or a billion. It doesn't really matter, except for special situations. So if you have a business, how are we going to deal with the business? Special needs kids, non-U.S. citizen, there's all myriad types of just life issues that you have to deal with. But the massive complexity relates to taxes and one other complexity, which is outside the tax realm. And this is a big one, and that's blended families. So it used to be the traditional family, husband, wife with their own kids, used to be the mass majority of our clients. However, that is no longer the case. We are getting more and more and more clients coming to us that are blended families. They have prior marriages, kids with prior marriages, and how is this going to work? So let's take a little bit of a taste of this. They come in, and the common scenario is, okay, I want to take care of my spouse, and then my assets go to my kids, and my spouse's assets go to their kids. And then I have to be the one to tell them, as soon as you give those assets to your spouse, you don't have any assets left to go to your kids. They're all owned by the other spouse and they can do whatever they want. And then we have a difficult conversation. Okay, how do we not do that? And then we go through it and it's not always very pleasant, but I'd rather someone have their eyes wide open as to what happens and deal with it up front than have a big shock later. Because when you have the shock later, you end up with a lot of litigation, a lot of unhappy people, a lot of family dysfunction. We try to avoid all that.
Folks, we're chatting with Richard Morgan. He's with Morgan and DeSalvo Law Firm here in the North Fulton area. Richard, you know, I want to get into what I think maybe sometimes you are. You're not trained as a psychologist, but you kind of act that way, or a counselor, right? But you given the scenario you just talked about, that's where your unofficial counseling skills have to come into play, right?
Yes. Sometimes I'll even say it in a meeting. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I play one on TV.
There you go.
So I say, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist. However, this is what I see. I can just tell from body language and the way someone says something, they're having issues. They're having concerns about the conversation. I'm like, okay, let's even work through this. Let me give you some options and let's see if we can work through this. I'll just give you one example. I had a situation with a relatively wealthy family. And they had children by prior marriage. And so one spouse has, in this case, five kids. And the other spouse, they had three together. So they had three. So they had one had five, one had three. And they could not decide how to split the money. One wants to split it five ways. One wants to split it three ways when they're both gone. So they could not agree. So I came with an idea. And I said, okay, let's assume, just for purpose of discussion, that you both owned one half of the assets. And let's say one of you gives your half in fifths and one gives your half in thirds, and then we'll do the fractions together. And we came up with different portions. And like, oh, okay, it's all good. Let's do it. So it's just kind of getting through, seeing where they're having issues and coming up with options that they can live with. And normally you can figure it out. Now, sometimes marriages aren't as strong as they were thought when they came into the office, and they they're stuck and they just can't agree and they go back and think about it. And oftentimes the sad thing there is if they really can't figure out in a way they can both live with it, doesn't happen very often. It just means they have to go back and think about it. It may never get done, which means it's probably going to be a disaster when they pass away. But we've never, in our practice, we basically avoid fights. We don't have any in our practice. We put out other people's fires, and we don't cause any. So we always try to see the future and say, what if, what if, what if, cross T's and dot I's and move on.
Yeah, because it's really not to your, I mean, some people think it's to the attorney's advantage to cause a fight because they make more money, but that's really not true for you. I mean, that's not, you don't have any incentive to do that.
I have exactly the opposite incentive. I want happy clients. So we live on, you know, new clients coming in, old clients coming back. I want everyone to be happy. I'm that guy. I want no one fighting. I don't like fighting. So we try to avoid fights at all costs. And we have rarely ever had anything happen in our practice. The only thing as I remember, there were two situations where it didn't go as smooth as we would have liked. One of them was a horror show where basically it was a bad choice of fiduciary. So the individual, longtime client, chose two of his many children to be in charge of everything. We had a great plan. It was beautiful. He started having Alzheimer's type issues, dementia type issues. Turned everything over, had it all, was beautiful. Turned it over to the kids with all the structure and everything was great. But it gave a lot of power, as we do in estate planning, to the people he trusted. And it turned out they were not worthy of his trust. And it was financial elder abuse. It was a horror show. Things you read about. It was horrible. We had to file lawsuits. It was horrible. We spent a lot of time with our clients and make it sure they really understand this is a big deal. When you appoint someone, you want a perfect person. And if you don't have a perfect person, you push them over to a trust company, a professional. It's a sure thing. So it's the one place we can go bad is if the client chooses the people going to be in charge poorly. So we can't help it except to educate our clients. We do the best we can to try to avoid that. So.
Gotcha. Now let's talk about how you pass assets, because they're, just some different aspects to it, depending on whether it's to the spouse or to children. So walk us through those.
Right. So from what you just said, it's a loaded question. I know where you're going with that. But let me tell you one part first. We get to the other part we're trying to go.
Okay.
So how do you pass assets? This is a huge unknown for many people. They just think, oh, I did this. It's all good. I have a will. That's where it's going. No. Certain assets pass in different ways. So beneficiary designation, so IRAs, qualified plans, life insurance, and annuities, the only way they're allowed to pass in this country is by beneficiary designation. If you don't have a beneficiary, it's in the contract. That's where it's going to go when you die. Financial accounts and financial securities, those may be passed by beneficiary designation. It was called POD or TOD, paid on death or transfer on death. Don't have to, but you can. So that's beneficiary designation. Then you have joint ownership, and there's two types. One is joint ownership right of survivorship. That means if at the death of an owner, bam, it just goes to the survivor or survivors automatically. Don't have to do anything about it. Financial accounts, financial assets owned jointly are assumed as joint tenancy right of survivorship and just pass. Non-financial assets are considered the other type of joint ownership when you have more than one owner. That's tenants in common. And that's if you had two, like 50-50, one of you dies, it goes through their estate, and the other 50% stays with the other owner. Nothing passes. You just have an undivided interest. Then you have assets potentially in trust while you're alive, and the trust controls it. The other assets that don't pass by beneficiary, joint ownership, or survivorship, or in a trust, drop down into your what's called your probate estate, and that's what's controlled by your will. So, sorry to go through that long dissertation, but that's important. A lot of people don't get it because what they end up doing is their documents are maybe good, maybe not, and they go that direction. That's who they're going to benefit. And their assets go that way, and they don't meet. So it's key that you coordinate all this stuff together. Now, to get to your actual question, how are you trying to pass your assets to your family? Let's assume a husband and wife with kids. So the way you're going to pass this, if assuming kind of a standard family, they would like to make sure that they're in full control, full access. They want to make sure the spouse has full control, full access after the first death. And they want to go to the kids in equal shares in some manner to second death. So there's three questions. Question number one, how do you pass your assets to your spouse? It's either outright or in trust. Outright is simple. Under the tax law, we now have something called portability. I would get, it's a little bit more complicated. But basically, it's not a tax problem in 99% of the cases. You can go all outright. The reason you would go in trust today, which used to be the standard for tax reasons, but now it's not. It's a bit more complicated. You have asset protection issues, you're a business owner with liability concerns, that kind of thing. You want more control, like a blended family. And there's a little bit of tax benefit for the ultra wealthy. But most of our clients today are going outright because it's way simpler. The next question is, how do you pass to the kids? So you get the following options. Number one, they're old enough, mature enough, you just give it to them. That's easy and very simple. Number two, they're not old enough, but you'd like them to have it. You do what's called short-term trusts. It's in, you have a trustee in control that you choose. It's in a trust for a period of time, only until they're old and mature enough, and you give it to them. Let's say 25 and 30 or 30, 35, something like that, installments or a lump sum. We normally go with installments. They can learn from their mistakes. The third option is called long-term trusts. On that one, you stay in trust for life. And then it goes to the grandchild level and oftentimes distributed or it can be extended. The key to having it in trust is that it is a protective steel tank. It's a protective shield against any unwanted outsiders. No one else gets in. No divorcing spouse, no personal guarantees, no judgment creditors, nothing. No bankruptcy, nothing. I've done this since 1987, but at a really high end since 1992. And we've had maybe six or seven lawyers show up trying to break these things. Normally a child's getting divorced. We've had in those six conversations, either got a letter, an email, or a telephone conversation. I sent them the document saying, well, if it's a divorce, it's litigation, there's discovery. You have a right to the documents. I'll give them to you now. Here's where you need to look. I've never gotten back one phone call, one email, one letter. They've disappeared. There's nothing they can do. Nothing. So it's incredibly protective. And then you would say, well, why wouldn't I want to pass my assets in a protective manner? And I would say, well, you do. The only issue is, do you have enough assets to make it worthwhile? So what I would say is $300,000 per child or less probably isn't worth it, unless there's special circumstances. $500,000 is pretty good. Not a no-brainer. At $1 million per kid, it's an absolute no-brainer to me to do it that way. And then to me, to get to about $5 million or so, it's the latest and greatest way to go, called dynasty trusts. You cannot do that in Georgia until July 1, 2018, where instead of just going for the child's life and kind of paid out the grandchild level, give the child maybe the power to extend, we just set it up at the beginning to keep on a rocking until it runs out. And you can go for up to 360 years, which is the new time limit on how long a trust can last. So basically, you can have it last as long as your descendants are around and need the protection or want the protection. So those are the ways that it passes either the spouse or the kids. That third question, I won't go, I've been talking too long already. It's either in a will-based plan or a revocable living trust-based plan. Wills are easier. Revocable trusts have a bunch of side benefits you may or may not want. So that's kind of the
gotcha.
Way to think through that.
Well, you know, yeah, you went on for a while there, but I think there's a point. No, that's okay. I think there's a point to this though.
Right.
Because some people try to, again, they're cheapskates and they want to save money and they're cutting their nose off to spite their face by going to the internet and getting a will off of the internet. And what you just went through are all these different complications, issues, considerations that you really need to set down with somebody like you. And I know you agree with that, but talk a little bit about that to people that, think that going and pulling a internet or a internet will is a great idea.
Gotcha. So years ago when the internet type wills were being done, LegalZoom and the like, I remember hearing a Clark Howard on the radio when he hears his radio show on the radio in the car, said, oh, if you have tax, this is when the exemption was $600,000. When you have tax issues, you need one of these really good lawyers. If you don't have a lot of wealth, a lot of tax issues, you can go on the internet and get it done like on LegalZoom. So I'm like, what is LegalZoom? This is years ago. So I went and checked. No disrespect for LegalZoom or any other one. There's lots of them now. But here's the biggest issue that I saw. When you go to these forms, you don't know what you don't know. So my experience in using these forms and looking at them, I looked at lease agreements, I looked at wills and the like. They don't have a, I find, they have a lot of provisions that you can literally rip out a document, who cares? And then they have, they're missing all kinds of stuff that you would want. A layman who's not a lawyer specialist doesn't know what isn't there. They just think whatever's there is fine. It looks like a will. But when you go to the disclaimer on these sites, they say, at least the LegalZoom one I saw years ago, it says, we guarantee you nothing. We don't guarantee the will document that we're giving you for whatever it costs is actually a will. It's, we don't guarantee you anything. So you are literally on your own and you don't know what you don't know. And that, to me, that is the biggest issue.
Okay, folks, those of you that have those kind of documents, I hope you heard that from Richard Morgan, Morgan and DeSalvo. Richard, we question of the day that I know people are dying for me to get to is tax changes on the horizon that it looks like we certainly had a change in administration, so we would expect tax changes. Talk about what you see, what you expect.
Yeah, so the tax law oftentimes is in flux. The last tax act we had after 1997 was a tax act we had that was a permanent normal tax law. In 2001, it became a temporary 10-year tax law, which then extended for two more years. We finally got another normal permanent tax law, unless they change the law, in the end of 2012, called 2012 Tax Act. So beginning at 2013, we had real law that was permanent, like a normal permanent law, as permanent as it could be with Congress. Then Trump got in, and I call it the Trump Tax Act, but the 2017 Tax Act went back to this old way because of the way they squeezed it through the Congress to get it voted on, to get the votes they needed to get it through their process. They created another short-term act. It goes away by the passage of time. So it started in 2018 and ends at the end of 2025. So in January 1, 2026, we're back to 2012 Tax Act law. What that law did is it doubled we had the highest exemption from the death tax, the estate tax, gift and estate tax, the highest we've ever had beginning 2013. It went from about $1 million for sure to $5 million indexed for inflation. In the 2017 act, we doubled it to $10 million indexed for inflation. So between a husband and wife, and we either do trust planning or this thing called portability, you get two exemptions potentially. So today you're about $23 million of exemptions, which means maybe 0.2% of the population has an estate tax problem. So for the mass majority of the population, estate tax just is not that big of a deal. But now what's happening is Congress has changed, the presidency has changed. Now we have Democrats in office, and they're already talking about undoing the 2017 Tax Act benefits. So what does that mean? Going from $10 million next for inflation back to $5 million next for inflation. They've also threatened to go down even further to $3.5 million, which was what most estate planners thought was going to happen in 2013, but it didn't, or 2012 Tax Act, but it didn't. They went to $5 million, which kind of shocked us. But they've always, the Democrats were negotiating back then for $3.5 million. So we have $10 million today. We could go as low as $3.5 million each. We're probably going to be $5 million, but maybe $3.5 million. And the question becomes when? If you look at the law, it'll be the end of 2025. We got time. That's not going to happen. The Democrats have already said they are going to do tax law changes. They want to buy a lot of stuff. How are they going to pay for it? They're not going to pay for all of it, but they got to pretend they're going to pay for it. They got to raise the tax laws, raise revenue. How are they going to do it? Go after the wealthy. That's their shtick. So I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent. It's just what it is. So what are they going to do? They are probably the highest probability is that by January 1, 2022, you got the rest of this year to plan. They're going to have the exemption come from 10 million to five, possibly 3.5. There's a chance it will be the next year. They'll have till 2023. Maybe there's a chance they go mid-year. Maybe. But the highest probability is you got this year, and then it's going to hit January 1, 2022. So then the question is, what do you do about it? If you are, in fact, a wealthier family and you have that kind of asset value, you have this temporary part of the exemption from $5 million or $3.5 to $10 million. If you don't use it, it gets lost. You lose it. So then the question is, what do you do to use it? And that's more of a complicated decision. It's a lot of money that you have to do something with, which makes people nervous. And so my job is to provide a lot of options and make clients not nervous by saying, yes, we can do these things and transfer them on paper. And legally, it's been transferred to get the benefit and use the exemption. But practically, how you feel shouldn't be much different. So you're going to have to do things that are significant, but we're going to try to do it in a way that you don't feel like it affects your life in any significant way.
What I heard there is don't wait.
Yes. The key to that is you have the rest of this year, and this kind of planning takes a lot of time.
Right.
You need to move sooner than later, or it's going to be too late.
Oh, so we're going to get to your coordinates here in a second, how people can contact you to do that planning. But real quickly, I want to ask about a special kind of circumstance. Those folks, and there are a lot of them out there that have maybe a special needs child, certainly an adult child that needs care after they're gone. Talk about some of those issues.
Yeah, so one of the special circumstances estate planners deal with all the time is families will have a special needs child. And so that special needs child probably can't earn a living. So they're going to need to get assistance either from the family, the government, or a combo. So what we do is we say, well, if they're unable to earn a living, we want them to be able to get whatever the government would allow them to get to help them. And then the family's money will supplement that. So we basically have instead of passing assets outright, or what I call poor man estate planning, giving the special needs child's assets to another one of the siblings, another one of your kids, which is a potential disaster in different ways, is we have it passed in a special type of trust called a supplemental needs trust or special needs trust, different name, same thing. We do them in a flexible way. So if it turns out they're not actually needed, you're not sure. If it turns out they're not needed, the special provisions just aren't activated, and it just becomes like a regular trust. But basically, you would put someone else in charge to handle the funds for the special needs child. It'll be done in a manner that if they could otherwise qualify for government benefits, they'll still qualify. These assets will not count, and they will just supplement that. So it maximizes the availability of resources for that special needs child.
Lots to chew on here, folks. I think we're getting to the most important question at this point, because we probably have got some folks head spinning and they need some counsel at this point. So the question is, Richard, how they can get in touch with you to get more information.
Right. Yes. Very, very easy to get in contact with. Telephone number 678-720-0750. If you hit number 5, we'll get to our assistant if they don't answer the phone. And they can set you up with an initial estate planning meeting, and we don't charge for that, so that's free. And because of COVID, we're doing all those by Zoom at this point. We also have a website. We have a ton of educational materials. I've been doing newsletters. We've been doing newsletters for probably 9 years. A huge amount of resources on our website. It's at morgandisalvo.com, MorganDisalvo.com.
Richard Morgan, folks, from Morgan and DeSalvo. Richard, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, just a quick reminder that if you've got administrative tasks, bookkeeping issues in your business that you're spending time on that you really need to outsource and you need to get off your plate, I've got an answer that involves picking up the phone and calling Essie Escobedo over at Office Angels. Now, she's been around for 21 years, and she's got a whole team of angels that she takes and picks one that is the best good fit for you. They fly in, get the job done, and they fly out. And they do this on an ongoing or as-needed basis. And they're terrific, and I know that firsthand because I use their services, and I couldn't run my business without Essie and her team. So you can go to officeangels.us and check them out and do all that stuff. Or my suggestion is just call Essie, 770-442-9246. Give her a call. Tell her I suggested you call and explain your problem. And she can talk you through that and make a good suggestion for you. Office Angels, Essie Escobedo, call her today. And folks, just another request as we close the show here. I would love it if you would go to North Fulton Business Radio as the search term on your favorite podcast app and give us a 5-star review. I'm boldly asking for that, not for me, not for Business Radio X, for our guests, because it helps people find the show so that they can find great business leaders like Richard, and they may be in need of their services. So that's the importance of that, and I would appreciate it if you could do that for us and for our guest. Also, please connect with us on social media. We're North Fulton BRX on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So for my guest, Richard Morgan, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.